Badass.
Gosh. Okay, Tuesday, February 18th, 2025, and morning to all of you. Maybe I should acknowledge that there are, including me, 41 people here, for what it's worth. We begin with 20 minutes of meditation, and then we'll have a little reflection on Dharma. I will
Mario, can
give
you close the door?
let me mute all. I will give some instruction, meditation instruction, finishing my sentence. Okay. So, settling back. Think most of you are experienced at this. So, just taking a posture that supports your being present, being attentive, being calm. Close your eyes or just lower your gaze, bringing the attention into the body. And relaxing the body while remaining upright, if that's workable for you. The upright posture tends to make it easier to be bright and alert. It's actually a useful thing to explore the different ways your mind responds to different postures. The practice of mindfulness is open into the four postures: sitting, standing, walking, lying down. So it's not that we can't be mindful in any posture. It's just to notice how that capacity and that ability changes with different postures. And feeling the body breathing. Even as we hold the body still, we see that there is still movement at the same time. This is kind of parallel to the mind itself, the mind which has an inner stillness, the knowing quality that is not moving, and then the thoughts and mental impressions that move through that awareness, just as the body can be still with the breath, so too the awareness can be still with mental objects. As we cultivate the quality of open awareness, we may be able to attune to these dualities. Mindfulness of breathing is initially taught as a calming and concentrating practice. So we can put the breath, the attention on a particular point in the breath, whether it's the nostrils where we might feel the touch of air coming in and out, or whether it's the belly, the diaphragm, we can feel the movement, the rolling movement, rising and falling. So here our attention is with the changing experience. The breath itself is simple. There is no story, no content, no words. As much as we can just be with the breath, then our experience, our mind becomes simple. We try not to be disturbed by the persistence of thoughts. Just keep returning to the breath, breathing in and breathing out. The nature of effort in meditation is at the heart of this practice. To strive or grasp after states or experiences can only create more agitation in the mind. And so our effort is directed towards letting go. Letting go of thoughts, of desires, of analysis, fantasies. And then the other quality of effort is simply to feel. To be fully with the breath, the body, the underlying feelings and energies, emotions, without doing anything with them. There's often the urge to figure out, to understand why something is happening. We see that this just complicates the mind, so we let go. Turn to the simpler question, what is happening? Once again, good morning, etc. Excuse me. My voice was pretty bubbly there in the guided meditation. Apologize if that was distracting. Well, what to address this morning? Well, I was thinking about how, as a person who doesn't drink or use, I can, and one can, feel kind of like an outsider in sort of our culture. And, you know, with lots of ordinary activities, it's not apparent. Particularly, I guess, when I watch movies and stuff, kind of like everybody's, you know, drinking and taking drugs and, you know, this sort of way in which it's normalized. You know, you kind of, I'm using the second person pronoun, the you pronoun, I should say I, but anyway, you know, it's easy to think that somehow you're missing something, but what I largely feel, though, is a kind of innocence, and I've used this idea before, or talked about this idea that getting sober is like a return to innocence, and you know that there's something really beautiful about that. It's not something that's particularly praised in society, or you know, even considered a thing to do. But you know, it's always striking to me that the things that are illegal for young people, whether it's gambling, drinking and using, certain sexual behavior, you know, they're really all, in terms of the Dharma, in terms of Sila, they're all outside of what's considered wise action. And so the being outside of the mainstream culture isn't necessarily, certainly from a Buddhist viewpoint, it is wise, you know. And so, you know, that then kind of, I guess, for me also kind of connects with my sense of Buddhism as being something that's clearly not associated with mainstream values of, you know, consumption and intoxication, and you know, and we can see that, you know, it's interesting to me that we're in this time, this political era, where certain populations are getting targeted, and even, you know, conflicts, religious conflicts, and yet somehow nobody's bothered to point at the Buddhists, you know, and you know, that's We can be grateful for that. But I mean, I think part of that is that Buddhists tend not to want to get involved in fighting or competing, trying to proselytize. They're not a threat, hopefully. Well, you can see I don't have a lot that I'm really focused on this morning. I had a bit of a relapse, a setback in my recovery from my knee surgery, and that's it's not there's not a lot of like whatever wisdom connection sort of bubbling up through me. I'm kind of just trying to get through each day right now, which is, of course, a recovery principle. So it's good to have that as a guiding principle. And as I mentioned, I probably mentioned before the recording that I'm got some days when I have my house to myself, and I plan to do some sitting and kind of, again, like noticing mind states and seeing where mental capacities are. It's certainly been clear to me that having major surgery has a major impact on my ability to meditate. And when I say to meditate, I mean two things: the concentration certainly is weakened, but even what I would generally call mindfulness, but more specifically, is like clarity of awareness. And it's again so interesting because, having been practicing for so long, I've been practicing for 45 years, and I've watched a lot of mind states, and it's sort of surprising when new ones show up, and you think that you've seen them all, and then there's this like, oh, what's this weird, like foggy mind state, and seeing what it impacts and what it doesn't impact, that things like concentration and clarity of attention, clarity of awareness are impacted. A lot of things are completely sort of normal and sharp. So, here's Kevin making it all about himself. It's getting hard. It's a hard time. Okay. Yes, Steve. Good. Or John. Yes. Good point. Thank you for guidance. I need guidance from my friends here. How about talking about your conversation with the Buddhist nun you met? It's interesting. Thank you for that prompt. As I said, she's a scholar, but certainly a very serious practitioner, and quite reclusive, not really wanting. She's here to teach a class in the graduate East Asian studies, at UC Berkeley, and There's maybe a half dozen people in her class, and it seems like that's probably all she wants. She wants a little lot of quiet and to be left alone, I presume, to practice and maybe to study. She's in her mid-40s. I think she said she was 45, or somehow I figured that out. Said she's known Anolio for like 20 years. He's been her main teacher. She lived in Sri Lanka for a long time. And when I spoke with her, the two times I sat with her, for me it was kind of like a friendly conversation with a knowledgeable peer, someone who's certainly probably certainly a more advanced whatever student of the Dharma and probably practitioner as well. But the feeling that we probably have a lot of similar understandings, and she was saying she doesn't like to teach meditation to beginners, which I thought was kind interesting. And I was saying, well, I really like teaching to beginners. She said, well, can you speak Italian? Because she's like teaching. She's apparently moved back to Italy, and there's a Dharma center that she's involved with, or like, I'm not sure if she's, I don't know if it's a monastery or. But I think she does teach some retreats, but just for, very advanced students, I think. And kind of, and sort of a conversation about the bigger picture of the Dharma world these days a little bit, and the things that are frustrating and the things that are inspiring. In a conversation like that, it's one of those encounters where you're like, there's a whole bunch of things that would be fun to talk about with this person, and I don't want to annoy them. And I also want them to know that, like, yeah, I'm pretty knowledgeable too. And so, there's a little bit of me trying to, get her approval, but not a whole lot of that, because I kind of feel, and I kind of feel like I'm okay. I don't need too much approval. I will say there were a few times when, like, I would mention certain people, particularly certain monks. And afterward, I kind of inferred from her non-reaction that there was something she didn't care for about those. So then you realize, oh, there's this whole, like, it's not political exactly, but there's the Buddhist monastic world is very complicated and somewhat messy. And, particularly women in the Buddhist monastic world are second-class citizens. I mean, one of the reasons she's kind of lives independently because she doesn't want to be at a monastery where she says, she'll wind up having to be like the cook, and the women in Thailand, they're expected to just take care of the monks, and they might. And even the question of full ordination is a complicated one. And so yeah, there's a lot there, and don't know that I can say much more about that. Okay, I'm gonna look. Oh, thank you guys for commenting things. The painkillers after surgery are a risk. How do we manage that? Oh, good one. Well, particularly if you're an opiate, recovering from opiate addiction and heroin or whatever form, I'm not sure I have a. I mean, I can say some things about it, traditional things. For myself, I don't like the feeling. And maybe, I mean, I don't think I ever really liked opiates. Like, I snorted heroin once and I just threw up. And I was like, oh, that's, I'd rather wait till the end of the day to throw up after I'm drunk, then throw up, then, do it right away. So I don't think I'm the best one to comment on the particulars of it. But I had surgery in my when I was 2 years sober, and at that time I felt much more vulnerable than I do now. And so I was very careful to be in very close touch with my sponsor. I was very I mean I continue to be very careful to only use them as prescribed. But this time, I didn't have that much pain after, after the surgery. I mean, pain is just so interesting. And, I've talked about this that, I practiced with my legs crossed for so many years that, and my knees would usually hurt. Certainly, anytime I sat for a long period of time, my knees would hurt. And I practice mindfulness with that, so that coming out of surgery on my knee, it was very familiar to apply mindfulness to the sensations, and frankly, I've had worse sensations meditating than I had after the surgery. Now, okay, of course, I came out of the surgery and I was on like a nerve block for 24 hours, and so it was presumably not very much pain, but even when that wore off, icing. When you ask me what did I do, well, I managed that with icing and ibuprofen and Tylenol, and that was enough to keep it where I could sit with and feel the sensation, and it wasn't overwhelming. If it had been stronger, I would have taken stronger drugs. But again, I think, if I stick with the prescription, I'm pretty safe. But I also want to say, like, I don't like the thing of like, oh, I'm going to tell you how to handle this, and then because I don't know what different people go through. If I were having serious pain, and over a sustained period of time, that would be really hard. I don't have an answer about how to manage that. Like, that's how people become, I presume, addicted to the oxycodone and OxyContin. I can, I will say that maybe, and this is just really a maybe, having a mindfulness practice makes pain more manageable. I like to think that, but I've never been faced with something that was unmanageable, so I don't know. So I think, it's a really, really tough question when we're talking about serious, like, nerve pain and things. So that's the best I can respond, Jeffrey. And there's a couple of comments that are shared, that are written privately to me. What do you mean by world? I'm not sure which world, what I said about the world.
You said you talked to her about changes in the Dharma world.
Oh yeah, the
I
Dharma
don't
world.
know, I don't can't conceive of what that Dharma world is.
Okay, well, that means like places like Spirit Rock and Insight
Oh, I
Meditation
see.
Society, and then like the monastics and Western monastics, and then the mindfulness movement, and all the different Buddhists around. It's definitely a lot of different aspects to that world. Communities, to I could say the Buddhist community would probably be a better term. And Tanya says, I have chosen pain. I have chronic pain due to a spine injury, and meditation helps a lot. Accepting the pain as a friend is helpful too. Debbie, thank you. Seems for an alcoholic addict, the aftermath of pain and medication post-surgery may land us in a type of bardo, not being sure of our ground or some level at some level, right, for being able to return again and again to mindfulness and dharma. And we can only be aware of what we can be aware of, and we can only concentrate as much as we can concentrate, when you're used to certain levels of concentration or mindfulness, it's difficult to find yourself blocked from those levels. I guess I can shut up now and let you guys help me here. I apologize for being so, out of it, basically. Thank you. Anne, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. A lot of thoughts, but I'm wondering, can I ask a question?
Of me?
Yeah.
Yes,
What's
you
your
can.
mind? I'm like your mind state around not feeling good, the foggy. I mean, are you judging yourself? And when,
Am
you
I?
know. Yeah, are you? I mean, is there part of that? And are you mindful of that? And how do you, how does that, yeah.
I don't think that's the main issue. It's more the frustration. There's frustration, there's fear, because I'm afraid that I'm losing cognitive abilities, and there is the unpleasant, the unpleasant Vedana.
Yeah, it feels ongoing, you know. When it's on, when something, when unpleasant is ongoing, it is frustrating.
And I sat that 6 weeks at IMS in the fall of 2023, and my sense of it now is that kind of I was beginning to experience the limits of my the sort of slippage of my concentration and clarity. And then since I haven't sat a retreat since then, so as I say, I'm planning to spend a few days this week sitting, and I'm very curious to see if I can get some more concentration and clarity, or if my capacity is just beginning to diminish. This is, you guys know me enough, like I'm pretty open about my experience, and I have a couple of friends, namely Wes Nisker, the late, and Bill Alexander, who both of whom descended. Well, Bill is descending into, he has Alzheimer's, and if you don't know who he is, he's a Buddhist author,
Sure.
recovery in recovery.
Ordinary
Well, yeah,
Yeah,
ordinary
ordinary.
recovery. Yeah. William Alexander. And, he's a friend of mine, and I hear from him, and, he's going into care, and like, so this is a thing that can happen, right? Like, as if we didn't know that. And as if somehow meditating for a long time protects you from cognitive decline. I mean, that's just more delusion, right? And, I'm not exactly a hypochondriac, but I am very like, I have a negative turn of mind. Let's put it that way. It's not a surprise to anybody here. And so, I'm not catastrophizing, but I'm close. There's a I have that capacity to like or to and because I also because I guess I'm afraid of denial. I just really don't like denial and toxic positivity and pretending that like everything's fine. It's like, what if it isn't? I don't know. Like right now, it's not great. And and of course, the delusion is permanent. Thinking that it's something is permanent, but so that's sort of the conundrum. But So I really I'm embarrassed that I've made this morning like this.
Oh, no, it's Dharma.
Maybe I'm putting Ori's information into my phone while we speak because he sent me a private message, and I before the chat gets deleted, I want to take it down.
Okay, you got it.
Okay.
Thank
All
you.
right. Thanks, Anne. Looking forward to seeing you next week. But by the way, those who here who are coming on retreat, Anne is going to be one of the teachers next week. Beautiful. And that'll be very nice. Steve, go for it.
Well, first of all, you're intimately familiar with my situation. We've known each other quite some time, and when I put that message in the chat about, I was feeling your discomfort, when you were talking about your conversations with the gal, and I said, well, think about it. Hit me, just the four agreements came into mind because, we get this discomfort, this weird feeling of like, oh, I said something, and I don't want to judge it. But then I started to think about really what happens to us. That's why I put in there the Dharma of pain, is that when you talked about having the relapse of from your knee surgery, all kinds of chemical things go on in the body. And then going along with what we've been talking about, what's going on in our country and in the world and all the different things, I think that your share today was incredibly powerful. I mean, because it's just, we all feel these feelings. We know that's really uncomfortable when you don't feel just right, whether it's physical, mental, spiritual, or whatever. So to be able to share that, I don't think you please don't feel embarrassed. Just know that you're loved and that I'm getting a lot of this out of this conversation, and I'm looking forward to, seeing you next week and getting on retreat. I know what it's like. I've been through it so many times in my life, and so I just roll with it, man. Take it easy. Just know that things are going to be okay, and what you're feeling is impermanent. So thank you for sharing all that. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve. That's very kind. You're certainly bringing up, the other obvious thing that is, I know many of, I mean, yesterday I went down to the Grand Lake for a march, and it was great. I mean, like literally thousands of people marching around with signs, and then another march came down from Fruitvale, and they marched all the way down International Boulevard. And as our march, which was just circling the park there at Lake Merritt, we came full circle, which took an hour maybe to go like a quarter of a mile. This other group came down the middle of Grand Lake Avenue, and And they were just walking in the street, and it was largely from the Latino population of East Oakland. And so we started walking the street. My immediate thought, guess what my immediate thought is? We're walking in the street. This isn't good. Like somebody, there's people who like to drive into these groups. And then a car started coming up in the lane beside us. And then I realized that they were part of the march and that they were protecting us basically by having this car be in the middle of the street that so nobody could get through. And it was very sweet and depressing as hell. Fuck,
I just, I made
that's.
a, I made a list of every Republican senator in the country, and I've been making 5 to 8 phone calls a day and just letting, in a compassionate way, letting these people know how we feel. So that's what we can do.
I need to do more for my own mental health because things are not okay. Things are really, really not okay. We've seen things be not okay, but there are limits. Stuart, hang on a minute. Just let me go through the chat, and then anesthesia has a strong effect on cognitive function, especially for the elderly. Hang in there. Thank you, Holly. Yes, I believe that. Okay. I offer these teachings freely. Good, good, good. Oh, all right. And I'll, so let me, as long as we're advertising, because I'm going to kind of be out of touch the next, I'll be here next Tuesday and the following Tuesday, but the first Tuesday in March, I'll be up in Napa at the Napa Valley Insight Group. So anybody who's in the area, that's a really great group. And then later in the month, I think it's March 22nd, or let me double check. I'm going to be, the 22nd. I'm doing a day long up in Kelseyville, which is in Lake County, for Joni Lane's center. And so again, if you're in Northern California and you want to hang out with me, please come. Okay, Stuart, go ahead.
I just kind of wanted to mention something briefly. Change the kind of direction of the meeting today.
Right.
I just want to say I really enjoyed the meditation this morning. I didn't find it bubbly.
No, my
My
voice
own.
was, I could hear like liquid in my throat. That's what I meant. I know that was a weird term. I know it. Yeah, but go
Anyway,
ahead.
my mind was really free flowing. Some thoughts would arise or appear. I'd notice them and I'd let them easily flow away using the purified water technique that we talked about before. I even had periods of equanimity and I just kind of realized all of a sudden, wow, I'm here. I'm right in this perfect spot. It doesn't last very long, but it's there. And I attribute this to making a greater commitment to meditation at least once a day. And short periods of meditation throughout the day. And I just want to acknowledge and thank you for bringing me to this point in my meditation practice and my recovery.
Thanks, Stuart. So, I will say that to the group. If you aren't meditating every day, get with the program. Just, in the gentlest way. This is something that really depends upon our regular effort. And it's very revealing to be able to sit. I've been talking about the different mind states. Well, it's really revealing to sit with your mind each day and see these different mind states. And the more we do that, the more agile we become in navigating these different states, and the more familiar they become, and we become more skilled at meditation. So it really benefits from repeated practice. Thank you, Stuart and Monica. We'll wrap it up with you.
Oh, yay. Hope I say something good.
You better.
I think about So many things, because I too am aging and just see little things. So there may come a time when we lift you up, dear teacher. My son has had his jaw frozen, and they moved across the country, and they have a small young family. And it's very, and I'm very, so sitting, even sitting in meditation, I mean, I'm like all tensed up and everything, but eventually it gets better. But it's not, I guess I had too much expectation. It's not satisfying like it usually is. And, but it is much better if I didn't than if I didn't meditate. I know I always try to think about the times of the Buddha that they lived through some very trying and terrifying times. And we have we have education and we have resources and our family now has resources, so it's not like they're going to disappear into the ether, and they're getting into action too, but to have this kind of brutal and ruthless gutting of all these services that protect the country. I mean, I think we were talking about the other day. We were saying, well, they're gutting the IRS. We should a way to hurt to fight back is not pay our taxes this year. So don't know, but the big thing is I don't want to have. I like what Jack Kornfield has said, that when you have resentment and anger in your heart, you poison your own. I mean, resent for others, you poison your own heart. And I don't want to poison my own heart, so I'm really struggling. And then, lastly, maybe you could talk about Buddhism and activism,
Well, yeah, I'm not so much angry as I am heartbroken, frankly, and I'm deeply, deeply sad, and that. I'm attached to some concept of this country, and it's agonizing to me to see that destroyed and or at least, attempted to be destroyed or weakened and distorted and it's agonizing to see lies and propaganda become what people accept as truth. So, it's a good question, Buddhist activism. I will, I have put this, I thought I had a, yeah, here it is. I don't feel like I'm good at speaking to about this. Because I get so emotional and political right away. But Bhikkhu Bodhi, I've just put a link in to his article on Buddhist ethics for a world in crisis. So, first of all, it is completely in alignment with Buddhist ethics to be engaged in politics. And I think that idea is already one that Buddhists don't always understand, that because there is some sense of like that Buddhism is about being passive, whereas, being a pacifist does not mean you're passive. Two different words and two very different meanings. However, how to engage the great challenge is to engage without anger, without hatred, to engage with love, and care. So that's the That's the kind of key mental element of it. Then it just comes down to asking what are the practical ways to be engaged. And I, again, I'm not an active, I can't really claim to be an activist because I do tend to like withdraw too much. And that's why I went yesterday. We had friends over for dinner on Sunday, and who that's how I that's how I found out about this event. And Buddhist activism isn't any different from any other activism, except that it is founded in love and compassion. And so it's really what's in your heart that distinguishes it from any other kind of activism. All the rest is just jump in and do what you can, and whether it's making phone calls, going on marches, whether it's going to law school and learning how to sue the government, whatever you can do, donating, I certainly think that independent journalism is one of the things that's really, really important right now, and because that's being attack that's under attack. I mean, so was there another question?
Oh, for me, no, but that did help me identify something because I'm extremely sad and almost brought to tears when you said that. And I think that's what it is. It's just grief.
It is
It's
grief.
just terrible grief. And it's like that psych, oh, look in, give me a punta. It's that cycle of grief, we're angry, we're in denial, we get depressed, then we get the deal making and all that, So.
And there's a certain amount of wisdom to like, okay, don't pay attention to all of it, but then there's it's like, okay, I can't justify just trying to be detached because that's too convenient. And the only reason I can even think about being as detached is because I'm in a place of privilege. And if I'm not in that place of privilege, all of a sudden it's not like there's no detachment from like, somebody's knocking on my door, or they're taking away my job, then all of a sudden I can't be detached. So I don't feel that it's ethical on my part to be detached. At the same time, yeah, I have to function, and I can't, immerse myself in the daily horrors. But I need to be engaged in and doing what I can, and so it's a challenge. And and I do try to also step back into that big picture, just that everything is impermanent. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but it's not at all. Of course, all nations are impermanent, all governments are impermanent, and but that doesn't mean I have to be like, well, it's all impermanent, so I'm just going to go and detach. It's like, no, can I be engaged in trying to save this thing and sustain this thing that has some beautiful elements to it, as well as its, historical horrors, but that has some beautiful elements. Can I be engaged in sustaining it and understanding that maybe I can't, that I'm powerless over over countries, and that I can try. So now that I'm talking about something that's I feel like I can say something, and I understand a lot of people have to go. So I'll say one of the things that came up when you mentioned about the time of the Buddha. There's this sutta in which the Buddha talks about I forget what the context of it is. It's kind of like It's about how nations become into conflict, and it starts with just like people can have it coming into conflict with each other. But it's got this long passage about all these different forms of torture, and it's really striking because the Buddha or whoever compiled these suttas knew about all these horrible forms of torture that I've never even heard of, but that some of which are pretty graphic and some of which are like, I don't know what that is. But the point being, like, human beings have been doing horrible things to each other for thousands of years. They've like thought up, like, how can I make this person be in extreme pain? And and we see that that's like an ongoing thing, right? That's like it's like that people do it today. It's still done today. And it's, I mean, what are you supposed to do about that? It just except recognize that humans have this great capacity for hatred and for cruelty, and they also have a great capacity for love and care and compassion. And it seems pretty evident that the great, great, great majority, of people are motivated by love and compassion and care, and want to be kind and generous, and that there's this small segment of humans that will always, be, basically, sociopaths, and that unfortunately one of the qualities of that sociopathy is a great ambition to control the world, and so many of those people become powerful. So it's just a tragedy of human history that evil tends to be very powerful. So there you go. How about that for an uplifting topic? Woohoo! Party on, Garth.
Well, now you know why they're trying to create AI.
Right. It's so okay. I know I've cheered everybody up and made everybody's day. So I know you're really happy you came.
Always.
We are
You
grateful,
know,
grateful.
one breath at a time. We got to keep showing up for ourselves, taking care of ourselves, loving those around us. I'm looking around my house going, well, there's a lot of like cleaning I can do over these next few days while I'm doing my retreat. Like there's, and just I'm gonna make a big pot of soup this afternoon, and then I'm meeting with somebody who wants to help with their alcoholism at 1 o'clock, and then I'm going to try to settle into some just meditation, see if I can get my mind a little clearer. I'll let you know next Tuesday.
Well, just think about being in the Redwoods next week and all that really good food that you're going to get to eat.
Yeah.
We'll see you next week, Kevin.
Right,
I love you.
everybody.
See you guys.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for your, presence and support,
Thank you,
friendship.
Kevin.
Okay, Monica.
Thanks.